Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Rabbi Alex Israel discusses Parshat Ki Teitzeh. Rabbi Alex Israel is a faculty member and the Director of Continuing Education for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parsha is Ki Teitzeh, and I think it's really one of my favorites. I still remember as a child in elementary school really loving this Parsha, and I think the reason why I love it is because of the incredibly rich variation of mitzvot which you find within the Parsha. First of all, some of the examples are pretty strange. We start off with the Eshet Yafat Toar, the woman prisoner of war who is taken home by a soldier who wants the woman as his wife, and we move on to a situation of marital discord, of two wives, one who is loved and one who isn't, to the rebellious son. There are fascinating mitzvot in this parasha, whether it is the return of lost items, lost donkeys, whether it's helping out somebody at the side of the road who's stuck, be it the laws of shatness, mixing wool and linen in clothing, marriage, divorce. There are even how someone should conduct themselves when they are living in the war camp, the battle against Amalek, warnings against slander, Lashon Hara, and again, a very important moral mitzvah, having honest weights and measures, making sure that one has honesty in business. One of the most famous mitzvot in the parasha is the sending away of the mother bird, that if one wishes to take the eggs from a nest, one has to make sure that the mother has been shooed away. An incredible, incredible range of mitzvot. And it is this breathtaking variation, which sometimes is confusing when one reaches the parasha, because one asks the question, oh, well, how is everything connected? And many of the commentators have really been puzzled by this issue. They try and find a methodology or a structure in order to put Parashat Ki Teitzeh, and they actually find it very, very difficult to pigeonhole this parasha. How exactly do you define this group of variegated mitzvot, this lush arrangement of different commands? How do they all fit together? What exactly are they? How do they form a collection? And I say this particularly after the experience of the last few weeks. Parashat Re'eh, which we read 2 weeks ago, has a focus. It has many, many mitzvot, but the commands all focus around the notion of the temple, what goes on at the temple, and particularly the opposite of the temple. In other words, when people decide to form some other ritual center, which is banned. In other words, there's a overarching theme which seems to run through the Parsha of Re'eh, and that is the temple and appropriate worship, appropriate place for worship, and inappropriate. Likewise, last week in Parashat Shoftim, we have all the laws of the different institutions of government or of leadership. We have the laws of the shofet and the shoter, the judge and the policeman, if you want. We have the laws of the king and the prophet and the kohen, and all the different institutions like the Supreme Court, which is set up in order to administrate a country. In other words, Shoftim also has a wide range of laws, but they all fit together under a given heading, under an overarching theme. And when one looks at this theme, one can understand that one is being given a sort of code. One is being given a collection of laws, which, when they're all put together, have a cumulative effect to create a political system. That's Parashat Shoftim. Back to Ki Teitzeh. Ki Teitzeh is difficult because it has such a wide range of laws. Laws which relate to family life, laws which relate to idolatry, laws relate to a war camp, laws which relate to business ethics, laws which relate to personal status, laws which relate to cruelty or kindness to animals. And it's a sort of a potpourri collection, and one doesn't know how to deal with it. So what I would like to do is deal with this question of sequencing in the parasha. And in fact, that's the, when people try and find order in Parashat Ki Teitzeh, the phrase generally used is Lama Nismacha. Why is this particular mitzvah related to the next mitzvah? it seems like most of the commentators, and here I'm referring to the medieval commentators like the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban and certainly Rashi, don't look for an overarching theme to Parsha Ki Tetzeh. And instead of that, they actually try and find links, causal connections between one mitzvah and the next. They say, well, obviously there can't be no connection. This can't be just a random series of different laws. And therefore, there must be a connection. And therefore, lama nismacha mitzvah X to mitzvah Y. Why is one mitzvah related to the next one? And in this regard, I'd like to share with you a few comments, famous comments, of Rashi on this week's parasha. But first, in order to do this, I think we're going to have to describe the first three mitzvot. The first mitzvah in the parasha is known as Eshet Yifat Toar. It describes a situation in which a man goes to war, and he sees a woman in the prisoner camp who he takes a liking to, and he decides he'd like to marry this woman. And the Torah, the rabbis say that somewhat reluctantly, but the Torah actually gives certain conditions where the man can take this woman out of the prisoner camp and take her home as a wife. And she has to undergo an entire process of rehabilitation. There are different ways to understand what he is trying to do. That's the first mitzvah. It is called the Eshet Yifat Toar. What follows from here is a second mitzvah, which talks about, I'll read the opening words, Kitiana le'ish shnei nashim, if a man has two wives, one who is loved and one who is hated, ha'achat ahuva ve'achat snua, how should he treat his children? And it talks about the fact that he has to, even if his firstborn is from the hated wife, he has to treat him with due respect and with the due rights which are according to him. So the first case is where somebody brings a woman home from an enemy camp and wants to marry her. The second case where a person has two wives, one who is loved and one who is hated, and how he treats his children. And he has to treat his children equally. And then the third law is about the ben soreh umoreh, the rebellious son who eino shomea b'kol aviv v'kol imo. He doesn't listen to his father or mother, and they have warned him. He is caught, and eventually he is put to death. Bizarre collection of laws. The rabbis, the Midrash Tanchuma, which Rashi quotes, actually gives some sort of linkage or connection between these different laws and says the following. On the first law of the woman who he takes back from the prisoner camp, it says, Lo dibra Torah ela keneged yitzahara. Rashi says, in fact, the Torah doesn't really want you to marry this woman. The Torah doesn't want women from other nations to be taken as wives to the Jewish people. And therefore, why did the Torah allow you to do this? The Torah allows you to do this because he knows that a person in the war camp won't be able to resist sexual temptation. And therefore, he says, Imein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matira Yisa'ena B'Isur. If the Torah doesn't allow a way of doing it, he will end up marrying her in a forbidden manner. He will just marry her against the law. And therefore, the Torah creates a mechanism. By the way, Rashi says very clearly that the whole idea of this law and the way this law is constructed is to make this woman particularly unattractive. According to Rashi, the Rambam has a different view, but according to Rashi, you cut off her hair, you do other things to make her look unattractive so that the man who is not allowed to marry her for a month, for the first month, will be turned off this lady and eventually will not marry her and return her back to her nation. Whichever way, this is what Rashi says, and here I relate to the linkage. He says, Im nasa, but if he marries her, sofa liot sona, eventually he will hate her. As it says afterwards, when a man has a wife, one who he hates, one who he loves. And in the end, sofa loholid mimena ben sore umore. And in the end, she will give birth to a rebellious son. And this, says Rashi, is the reason for the order of the parashiyot. Again, let me try and recap. If you take this woman who is from another culture, she doesn't culturally fit into Bnei Israel, you will eventually come to hate her. The assumption being, by the way, that this man in war, this soldier, already has a wife, so therefore he will have a wife, an Israelite wife, who he loves, and he'll have this new wife who he doesn't love. And the product of this union, of this unloved marriage, of this marriage which between two mismatched individuals, is a child who is dysfunctional. He is a ben sore o more, he is a weight and a burden on society, who will end up being a criminal and have to suffer a death sentence. Wow, quite a linkage. Rashi has thread quite a story here. The Rashi uses this method of constructing connections between the different mitzvot in another place in the parsha. Again, I'm going to scan forward, and for those of you who actually have a chumash open, you will see, I'm looking at the beginning of chapter 22, Perek Chaf Bet. Here, Rashi is going to relate to a different set of laws. And there, what we see is, we see first the law of returning lost items. After that, we see the notion of sending away the mother bird. And then, even when you construct a house, here's a building safety law, when you construct a house, you have to have a fence around the roof, a flat roof, you have to have a fence around so that nobody can fall off it. And then there are various laws which relate to your field and your clothing. What does Rashi say here? Very interesting. Rashi says, Ki tivne bayit chadash, when you build a new house, im kiyamta mitzvat shiluach haken, if you keep the mitzvah of sending away the mother bird, then sofcha livnot bayit chadash, God will make you worthy of building a house. And then you will be able, or to kayem mitzvat ma'ke, you will be able to keep the law of the fence around your roof. Why? She mitzvah goreret mitzvah. Because one mitzvah leads to the other one. V'tagia lekerem b'sadeh ulebagadim na'im. And then you will have a vineyard where you've got to be careful about mixed species. And then you will get to beautiful clothing where you have to be careful about shatness. Why? Because he uses the phrase mitzvah goreret mitzvah. A mitzvah leads to another mitzvah. Again, what has Rashi done? Rashi says like this. If you shoo away the mother bird, God will make you wealthy enough to afford a house. If you keep the mitzvahs of the house, God will make sure you're wealthy enough to have a field. If you keep the mitzvah of the field, God will make sure that you have wealth enough to buy beautiful clothing, etc., etc., etc. Rashi uses this phrase, mitzvah goreret mitzvah. One mitzvah induces or pulls along another mitzvah. And if that phrase appears as familiar to you, that is because it comes from Pirkei Avot. In Pirkei Avot, chapter 4, Mishnah 2, Ben Azai says the following. He says, you should run to a light mitzvah like a severe mitzvah. Apparently there are mitzvot which are weighty, maybe those of the Ten Commandments or something like that. There are weighty mitzvot, important mitzvot, I don't know, Shabbat, Kashrut, whatever it might be, the forbidden idolatry, honoring your father and mother. And there are light mitzvot. He says, you should take them all seriously. Run to a light mitzvah as you do a heavy mitzvah. Uboreach min ha'aveira, and run away from every sin, however small. Why? And here's the rationale of Ben Azai. She mitzvah goreret mitzvah ve'aveira goreret aveira. Because one mitzvah brings another mitzvah, and one aveira induces another aveira. One mitzvah induces a mitzvah, and a sin induces one to more sin. But then he says, Sheschar mitzvah mitzvah uschar aveira aveira. The reward for a mitzvah is a mitzvah, and the reward of the aveira is another aveira. There are two comments here. But as I was saying, take your mitzvot seriously. Take your mitzvot, however small or large, take them all the same, because one mitzvah causes another, it leads to another. But then he also says the reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah, and the recompense of a sin is a sin. And I'd like to suggest that there are actually two different dynamics which are being presented in this mitzvah. One is a more organic process, and one is a more artificial process. Let me try and explain. Mitzvah goreret mitzvah, aveira goreret aveira. A mitzvah drags within another mitzvah. I think this is more organic. A sin produces another sin. Again, one can imagine, I don't know, an unaffiliated Jew who decides to go to associate with a group of Jewish students and finds himself at a Friday night program on campus and then sort of gets into Friday night's activities and finds himself drawn closer to Kiddush and Tefillah and finds himself on a road to greater observance. That's an organic process where you do start associating with Jews, you get involved with Shabbat, then you get involved with more mitzvahs. It sort of happens. And likewise, we can think of the Aveira, Goreret Aveira. One sin can cause another. A person engages in a little bit of infidelity, financial fraud, and then he has to cover it up. And then he gets tempted more. One thing can lead to another. A person get in with a criminal crowd, and then he's asked to do certain activities, and then Avera, Goreret Avera. We do one small thing, and then suddenly we find ourselves with this snowball effect, with this avalanche, with this tidal wave, which produces more and more and more, until it is so overwhelming that one cannot in any way stop it. But that's different from the phrase, the reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah, schar mitzvah, mitzvah, schar avera, avera. Here, it seems like the process is more mechanical. In other words, I think of the turn, the phrase in English, one good turn deserves another. I'm not sure what that means, but it's like, it's not an organic process, it's not a natural consequence. It's like, if I did a mitzvah, God will reward me by giving me the opportunity to do another one. It's interesting that Rashi, in this week's parsha, uses both mechanisms here. Let me explain. In the second example we spoke about, I think it's more like schar mitzvah, mitzvah, schar avera, avera. The reward for a mitzvah is a mitzvah, the reward of an avera is an avera. Again, I'll read you the Rashi. He says, if you did keep the mitzvah, mitzvah, shiloh haken, if you did shoot away the mother bird, then God will give you the opportunity to buy a house, and then you'll have the opportunity to do the mitzvah of making a fence around your roof. I don't think there's any intrinsic connection between shooing away mother birds and a house. But he's saying, once you do mitzvah A, God will give you the opportunity to do mitzvah B. And then he says, and if you put a fence on the roof of your house, then God will give you the opportunity to own a vineyard, where you'll have to keep the laws of the vineyard. Again, why should owning a house lead to a vineyard? But what Rashi's suggesting is that once one has done one good act, God opens a window of opportunity. God gives you the possibility of doing further good acts, even though those acts aren't necessarily connected to one another. However, in the previous example that we spoke about, there's a far more organic process. Again, if you recall, a man takes a woman who is not from his culture, a woman from the enemy camp, a woman who maybe he shouldn't have anything to do with, but he just likes her appearance, and he brings her back into his society. That was a wrong thing to do, maybe wrong both from the perspective of her rights and her identity, but also he's got a wife waiting for him back at home. He shouldn't have engaged in this behavior. If he does bring her home, he says, you did an avera, then this will go bad. This creates a spiral. And what's the spiral? She'll become the hated wife in the family. You eventually will not like her. That moment of passion will not be followed by a harmonious relationship. And the result is, it will mess up your children. Your children will become a ben sorer umore. Two very, very different dynamics. It's interesting that in the dynamic of mitzvah, goreret mitzvah, it's almost like the evil multiplies itself almost automatically, almost by itself. Just like mitzvah, goreret mitzvah. When one does one good act, one goes to visit somebody in hospital, and then one finds oneself more involved in good acts, and then one finds oneself looking to, I don't know, give financial support to the hospital or to that charity, and that leads one to greater and better things. It's an almost a process which feeds upon itself, and God's not even so integrally involved. Whereas in the second mechanism of not mitzvah goreret mitzvah, but schar mitzvah mitzvah, the reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah, it's almost like God is connected. God is pushing the gears and pushing the levers in order to ensure that the reward for a mitzvah is the opportunity to do another good act. In fact, we sometimes use that phrase and we say, when somebody does something wonderful, we actually sometimes will say, Yeshar Koach, may you have strength, but sometimes we'll say, Tizkeh l'mitzvot. And what does that mean? That means, wow, you've done some mitzvot, well, you should have the zechut, you should have the privilege of even doing greater and bigger things, to doing even more mitzvot. The reward of a mitzvah should be that you get a chance to do more mitzvot. So first of all, I think we've learned something interesting together. We've learned about Rashi's approach, by the way, he draws from the Midrash Tanchuma, about the connections between different mitzvot, And the idea that the mitzvot are actually linked, not by maybe small textual connections, but rather by certain chains of causality, certain sequencing, a certain dynamic. But especially in this month of Elul, when we are thinking about our process towards Rosh Hashanah and the time when we start beginning to examine our actions, I think it's worthwhile to actually think a little bit on the deeper ramifications of these theories that I have dwelt upon today. The notion that our acts should be taken seriously, the notion that the small actions we do, however small, that if one engages in one Jewish act, if one engages in one mitzvah, if one decides to better one's life in a certain way, that it draws one into a certain dynamic of betterment. There's that sense of the butterfly effect, where a butterfly flaps its wings somewhere, I don't know, in Africa, and who knows, that could turn into a tornado somewhere in America. The notion that pay it forward, that one act can have infinite effect. That might be true in the biography of our very own lives. That once we start, and part of the idea of Elul, of doing tshuva, as we start thinking about going to shul a bit more to do slichot, or to give charity more, or to whatever it might be to better our Jewish actions and to take things on, the sense is that if we can create a positive dynamic, that if we can do even one mode of improvement, make a call to somebody who needs it, or whatever it might be, that will induce a avalanche effect, a knock-on effect, which can have ramifications that we wouldn't believe, and that our life doesn't only work in terms of particular actions, that our lives work in terms of dynamics, social forces, and that if we can start with certain small actions, maybe they will open new avenues of mitzvah to us in order to have a much deeper and more far-reaching effect in our lives. Thank you very much, and Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send your emails to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.